Session number 10880.
Mr. Puriel, 7.
And there's a meeting held in UK between the commanding officer of the 1st Battalion, the commandant of the depot, and Officer IC Records, and it was decided that I should not go to Malaya, but go to rejoin a battalion in Cyprus as a CQMS, company quartermaster sergeant, and which I did do, albeit with a fair amount of resentment because it had robbed me of promotion. But I was assured that I would be promoted at some time, a short time in Cyprus. And I went to D Company first, as CQMS, and settled down very well. And then one evening, one of our patrols went out in a champ, which consisted of the driver, a corporal, a signaller, and an escort, private soldier.
What's a champ?
Austin champ, you know, like a jeep. They were champs then.
That was a brand name.
That was the name of the vehicle because they were, had a Rolls Royce engine in them. And they were really a deluxe Land Rover. And they went out and used to drive around certain areas, the rural or town areas, patrolling. Because although nothing had happened untoward, we were on our toes and on the alert for it. And a homemade bomb was chucked at this corporal's chum. And of course, in the confusion, they all jumped out. And the bomb went off, and with the smoke and everything, in the confusion, somebody thought the driver was a bomber, and opened fire on him, and unfortunately killed him. So that was our first casualty. And from there on, it was a case of patrols, cordons, ambushes, searches, hoping that you'd either pick up somebody or you'd entrap someone. And things were very well organised, really, because although we were living out of camp in married accommodation, we were taken to and from our houses by a truck who went a circular route or different route each day. But both in the mornings and the lunch times or afternoons, we would stop the truck at any given point in the road and do for 10 minutes or so, do a road block check of traffic, which had the effect of more or less confining any open movement to bicycles or other stuff. But nevertheless, they still moved, or they got young people to move bombs because they used to threaten to kill the parents, you see. And they would do also if the youth didn't. One particular case was this youth of 17 who was a student in Nicosia. He was told to take this bag with some homemade bombs into leaving a certain spot in the marketplace in Famagusta for it to be collected by another Rioja person. And he was told that if he didn't do it, he didn't want to do it, but if he didn't do it, his father would be shot. And unfortunately for him, a roadblock somewhere between Nicosia and Famagusta checked the buzz and found the bombs and sort of picked him up. Well, at that time, to be in possession of weapons or bombs was a death penalty. But of course, there was always extenuating circumstances which were looked into, and although it was never made public, I think that youth was eventually was released, you know, in that it was not through his own fault. Then we had rather a sad case where someone would insist on having a parade for the Queen's birthday. I can't think whether that was 57 or 58. And worse still, to have rehearsals for 2 or 3 days. And one of our trucks was returning to Golden Sands Leaf Camp, which was a detachment of ours. And the Yoker had obviously kept a watch on it. And they threw 3 bombs in the back of the truck, and three of them was the men were killed and 11 were injured. I mean, that was absolutely stupid, having parades like that. Or even, I'm sure the Queen wouldn't have minded missing her birthday parade. But it cost the lives of 3 men and injured 11 of them. And the driver was particularly brave on that one, because the truck was on fire, but he kept driving and drove it off the road into the camp so that they were in safety.
You were telling me earlier that on the notorious Murder Mile in Nicosia, usually the people who got assassinated then, that to some extent it was their own fault.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, they didn't take notice of warnings or anything that was put out. Well, they were just going shopping or with the wives, or standing about on street corners waiting for the wife, or indeed parking on street corners in their own cars, where they were an obvious sitting target, because there was always someone about who was going to notice them.
So there was no need to use lead restraint?
Not from the husband's, from the armed forces husband's point of view, I don't think there was. If any shopping wanted to be done, then the wives could do it. Like my wife used to go out. I mean, she used to go out shopping along with the other wives on their own, and they'd get caught up in riots or in tear gas and stuff, but they just put it down and said, that's it, the troops have got to do it. And they'd dodge into a shop when anything was happening like that, until it was all over.
But was there any death threat to the wives of servicemen?
No, sometimes they, in Famagusta and in Nicosia, you had odd occasions when they threw a bomb at the door, or fire bombs, you see. Well, they were, fire bomb was easy to deal with because it was only a Coca-Cola bottle. And when they came down to that, it was only usually some amateur, young, enthusiastic amateur trying his hand out. I think there was one where they threw a bomb through the window, where they got a shutter open or the window open, because normally you had shutters across your windows or a wrought iron frame, you see. And if I recall right, it was either Padre, a chaplain, or his wife that was killed as a result of it. But that was the only thing. Once, when they were going, the children, you see, used to be picked up on a school bus and driven into a camp, in our case, into our camp, into Corrales camp, to school. And once their bus was stoned, but I always think that was other young Greek kids, you know, school kids, sort of saying, like kids do, sent British kids and stoned the bus. I don't think that was AOKA. It was treated as serious, which it has to be in cases like that, but I don't think it was anything to do with AOKA sort of having an organised raid on a children's school bus.
What was the attitude of the Greek Cypriot population towards the British troops?
The majority of Greeks were quite good, and the ones that we mixed with or met were always very good. And when they were on their own, they would tell you that they deplored the Iauka. And indeed, if they could help you to avoid unpleasantness with Iauka, such as the shops closing for strikes and that, they would tip you off when it was going to happen, which on a number of occasions did happen. And the shopkeeper had to close, otherwise his shop was burnt down or he was shot.
Did you have any contact with the Turkish Cypriots?
Oh, yes, yes.
What were they like?
Very good. They were quite funny and they were quite nice people. And they were quite friendly with the British. But of course the Greeks and the Turks, they were never going to agree because most of the Greeks was Orthodox Catholic, weren't they? And the Turks were Muslims or Muslims, weren't they? And in addition, the Greeks looked on the Turks as being in occupation there, or shouldn't be there, which in effect they were really, although they've been there that many centuries. And one of the Greeks who I knew very well, he came into our house one day and he got his head bandaged up. And I said, "What's happened to you?" And he said, "Oh, riot today in King Edward VIII Street." That was the street they always rioted in, the students and that. And I said, "Well, you shouldn't be there if there's trouble." He said, "Somebody hit me on the head with a baton, see?" I said, "Well, it's your own fault, you shouldn't be there." He said, "Oh yeah, but I couldn't move." He said, "And I wouldn't mind." He said, "Nothing," he said, "I would have laughed." He said, "If a British soldier had hit me." He said, "But a Turkish policeman to hit me." And he was highly indignant because he'd been hit on the head by a Turkish policeman. But he didn't mind in the least if it had been a British soldier. Rather.
How much danger did you feel in Cyprus?
Not a lot. Unease when you were on rural patrols out in the country at night. You had a champ with four of you in and a one-tonner. With a corporal and usually six men. And you toured the area quietly on sidelights, I suppose looking for trouble or trying to pick up any Iauka suspects. And although you didn't feel afraid, there was always the sense of unease that they were behind some dark hedgerow going to bung a bomb in, or else was sitting in a house and waiting to empty a couple of magazines at you. And that actually happened one evening to one of our young officers. He was in a champ and he got a corporal in the back as well as a signaller. And they were going through Phroneros, which is a little village with a pub bar in there. And as they got past the bar, so a couple of submachine guns was emptied into the champ, you see, and killed the officer and killed the corporal. And although all the village knew that the two blokes had been in the bar drinking, knew they were strangers, and obviously they had done the shooting, nobody would say anything, you see, because they were that front and they'd be shot, I suppose. Anyway, the police went straight along with a track of dogs and tracked them. The dogs went straight to a house, and when they broke in, there were two blokes in bed, all breathing heavy and sweating, and still got the boots and all the clothes on. So, and the Turkish police, they were, so they yanked him out because they were no respecter of person. And started questioning them. I don't know exactly what happened, but I think one of them died later in hospital. And the old village was put on the cordon, and all males between 14 and 70 were herded together and into an enclosure so they could be questioned and tested and inform and look at them from behind a curtain, you see. And there's all sorts of things supposedly happened that the British troops or the supposedly created atrocities and had burnt the beer bar down and what have you, but there was a full inquiry made as a result of that. A delegation come to England, but our battalion was cleared, you know, of committing any atrocities. They said a certain number had been injured, which was only to be expected when you were rounding up people in the dark and people were objecting, especially sort of fiery young blokes or something.
What was the name of the village?
Phrenaros. Phrenos. Or Nous. Phrenaros, yeah.
What did you and your comrades think of Aoka and Grivas?
Well, I don't think you thought anything of them objectively like that, except that they were to be kept under control, and if you brought them into the open sort of thing, if you could get them into a firefight, it was to destroy them, which your job was to do. I don't think you looked on them as being any superheroes or patriots fighting for their country or anything. They were just gangsters committing murder. Not only, don't forget that there were more civilians killed in Cyprus than there were troops. A lot more were murdered by Aoka. And there was only one way to deal with them, was to put them down as quick as possible in any way we could to deal with them. And of course, we were doing just that when the agreement came. I mean, the Suez business interrupted it a bit because we were getting the hardcore cornered up in the Trudas Mountains, and the airborne and commandos had got them cut off escapes, but then they had to be withdrawn to go to Suez.
Were you involved in operations in the Trudas Mountains?
No, I wasn't, no. At that stage, I took over a quarter company, you see, which was more or less, you were tied down to the... I used to do the odd cordons and things like that, and night patrols, town patrols and rural patrols, but as regards big operations, that was entirely left to the companies concerned, because your battalion was split up, really. Although your base was Corrales Camp and all your company headquarters and stuff were there, by force of situation, one company had to be on standby, ready to turn out at 24 hours to go to any incident, riot or what have you. Another company always had what they called a greyhound platoon, which if there's a bombing or shooting incident, they could be there within sort of flash of an eyelid, more or less. Then you had various detachments of troops in villages where they had police stations which could be vulnerable for Aoka to attack the police station to get their arms, you see. So they had detachment of troops, like a section under a corporal or a platoon, if it was a big area, under a sergeant. And some of these were quite a long way out, you see. So as far as my company was concerned, always you had drivers going backwards and forwards to them or even detached out with them. Then you always had another platoon down at the central police station in Famagusta with trucks and stuff, and cooks and all sorts of signallers, you see, so that Headquarter Company was really the hub that it was focusing round, and then you got all the cooks who they had to run a more or less 24-hour soup service for patrols going in and out, you know, all hours of the day and night, as well as the ordinary meals. And normally a day, your normal working day started at 7 o'clock and finished at 1.